From Illinois Public Media, this is The 21st Show. I'm Brian Mackey. By now, we all know many of the names by heart. Michael Brown, Laquan McDonald, Walter Scott, Philando Castile, Breonna Taylor, George Floyd. Those are just a few of the many people who have been killed by police in the last 10 years. Many Americans have come to accept the idea that there is indeed a problem with systemic racism in the way we maintain law and order in our society. But less discussed is the unfortunate reality that systemic racism is also a problem in other forms of emergency services. In what's being described as one of the first cases of its kind, two emergency medical technicians in Springfield, Illinois, are being charged with murder over the death of 35-year-old Earl Moore Jr. while he was in their care. The two EMTs have pleaded not guilty, and one of their attorneys told a judge their treatment of Moore, quote, may have been reckless, but that's a different charge. Meanwhile, Moore's family has filed a wrongful death lawsuit against the EMTs and their employer, LifeStar Ambulance. Joining us now to talk about what happened is Dean Olson, senior staff writer at Illinois Times, a weekly newspaper in Springfield. Dean, welcome to the 21st Show.
Thanks very much.
So I want to just begin, what happened the night of Earl Moore Jr.'s death?
Well, Earl Moore, who was 35 years old and had been struggling with alcohol, but he was a steady worker at a McDonald's locally, a shift manager for more than a decade. He was detoxing from alcohol and apparently hallucinating. So he calls 911 and mentions to the 911 operator that there might be guns present and weapons present. I think those words triggered a 911 alert to police rather than the fire department, which normally would respond to an emergency medical situation. So the police arrive, and they find that they have body cameras on, and all three of them are there. Mr. Moore is black. The police officers are white. The body camera footage shows that they're treating him fairly courteously and trying to figure out what's wrong with him. And then they end up calling an ambulance service because he agreed to be evaluated. So the ambulance arrives. This is a private ambulance company. There are three of them that serve Springfield. And the one is a paramedic, highest level of training, and another is an EMT. And they're observed treating, on the body camera footage, treating Mr. Moore fairly rudely, being curt with him. The female paramedic is yelling at him to get up, and she uses some expletives in dealing with him, that she's frustrated. Several of the people present later said that they felt like these workers might have been burnt out and just didn't want to be there. So the police were the ones who eventually helped Mr. Moore, who has problems walking at this point, onto a gurney right outside his house.
You know, and I'm going to interrupt you there, Dean, because I do want to say we have some of that body cam footage, the audio of it queued up. So let's take a listen to that tape.
Stand up. Stand up.
Oh.
All right, Earl, this is getting a little silly, man. There we go.
Okay, Dean, so what are we listening to there?
Sure. I can't tell exactly if some comments were made by the police there or one of the EMTs, Peter Cadigan. Cadigan is a 50-year-old person who has more than 20 years of experience. He is observed on the footage positioning Mr. Moore on his face down in the prone position and putting him in that position, and some who observed him said that he slammed him down. You can hear that and you can see it. And then he and the paramedic, Peggy Finley, load him into the ambulance. It's later described that, and they also, well, Cadogan tightens straps down, several straps down on him, and puts blankets on him, and it looks like it's fairly tight. He's not saying anything. He's kind of groaning as he gets into the gurney. He's obviously not feeling very well, and so they put him in the ambulance. It's a 2 to 3 minute ride to the hospital. Apparently, the people in the ambulance did not check his vital statistics, and although Peggy Finley later said that she did, and then both of them, and she later told people that he was combative, which is why she didn't take his vitals, because she didn't want to, quote, poke the bear. So they ride to the ambulance, with the ambulance to St. John's Hospital in Springfield, one of two level one trauma centers here. And within a half hour or so, Mr. Moore is pronounced dead. And this just causes an investigation that in about a month finds that Mr. Moore died from what's called compressional and positional asphyxiation. The local forensic pathologist, a medical doctor trained in these investigations, said he believes that this was caused by the prone positioning and the tight straps around him.
And I'm sorry, I'm going to interrupt again, because prone positioning is one of those terms. That means face down. That's a medical term for face down.
Face down.
Yeah.
Right. And it's later pointed out that these folks are trained to never put a person like that in the prone position. It's kind of like how they never recommend that babies be put on face down anymore either, because that can lead to sudden infant death syndrome. So apparently there was something going on with Mr. Moore, and he quickly suffocated. And so it's a total tragedy. The EMS community, which is large in Springfield because it's a medical hub, is just all lit up about this case. They're really embarrassed about the treatment that this man allegedly received. And since then, we've had the national news come and swoop in and cover a press conference from a nationally known attorney who's representing the family of this man. His name is Ben Crump. He represented many of the Black Lives Matter families that had loved ones die at the hands of police. And they said that this may be the first case in which EMS workers were actually charged. And they said this might have happened in the past, but it was never caught this way on body cam footage. And it's funny, because the only reason the body cam footage it was there was because the police were called instead of the fire department. And so that's where we're at right now.
Talk more about the decision. What does the prosecutor say? And let me just remind listeners, this is the 21st show. I'm Brian Mackey. We're talking about this case out of Springfield. It's been getting national attention, in which a man named Earl Moore Jr. died seemingly under the care of two emergency medical technicians who were transporting him, as we just heard, a very short ride from his house to St. John's Hospital in Springfield. He was pronounced dead within a half hour of arriving at the hospital. He had been suffering from alcohol dependency for a long time and had called 911 himself. Police responded because he mentioned firearms in the call to 911, and then the police in turn called paramedics. And now the paramedics are facing murder charges. And we're speaking about this with Dean Olson, who's a reporter at Illinois Times, a newspaper in Springfield. So Dean, what has the prosecutor said about this decision to charge murder? I mean, this carries a very long prison sentence as opposed to manslaughter or some lesser charge.
Right. Dan Wright, who's the state's attorney, said that the body camera footage especially shows that, and the fact that these folks were trained not to do this, and their alleged treatment of Mr. Moore on the body camera footage justifies the murder charge, because many people in the public who watch crime TV might think that you have to have a plan to kill somebody to be charged with murder. But Illinois law says that if you do acts without justification, that based on your training, experience, and the surrounding circumstances, you know that those acts would create a substantial probability of great bodily harm or death, that's one of the ways you can charge first-degree murder. So the attorneys for these EMS workers say that this is just way overboard on what the prosecutor should do. It might justify a negligence charge in civil court or a lesser charge in criminal court, but just it does not, will not hold up. They also don't believe that a jury will convict these folks. So this decision has been to charge has been hailed by the Black Lives Matter movement, the Urban League nationally and in Springfield, the NAACP, Ben Crump, and they also don't blame the police who witnessed this guy being loaded face down, because their training is that they're supposed to hand over somebody to the medical professionals and not try to interfere. And it all happened pretty quickly. So it's an unusual case. There have been calls for EMS workers to wear body cameras. That happens in some parts of the country, but it's not required in Illinois. But also, the Chicago Tribune just recently reported that this sort of a paramedic who works for the Chicago Fire Department was fired for a similar type of treatment of a patient allegedly in August, but that paramedic has not faced criminal charges, just being let go. So that's one of the debates in town. But Springfield is the town where the NAACP got its start. There was a race riot here at the turn of the century, and a bunch of black people were killed. Yeah. And since then, there's been racial tension here, like in many communities. So it's definitely a topic of conversation here.
And we'll be talking with Teresa Haley of the Springfield NAACP a little later in the show today. But before we end, I do want to mention that we did reach out to LifeStar Ambulance. This is the private ambulance company. Springfield proper does not have ambulances in the city government fire department or anything, as some communities do. There are fire trucks with medical people trained on them, but then private ambulance companies also respond to do any transportation that would be required. And we did reach out to LifeStar Ambulance to see if they wanted to join our show. They have not responded to our invitations. Dean, we have about 3 minutes left. I do want to talk just a little bit more about Earl Moore. You mentioned he had a steady job, even though he had been struggling with alcohol dependency. We have some audio from a press conference last Thursday. This is his mother, Rosina Washington. Let's listen to that.
And I miss my son. And I wish I can get him back, but I know I can't. We don't even have a word for it. Saying that my heart is broken doesn't begin to explain what this grief feels like.
So, Dean, tell us a little bit more about Mr. Moore and what he was like, what you've learned in your reporting.
He was single, had no children, but he was close with many of his family members. His niece talked at the press conference. He was very kind, loving person, not an aggressive person, not a combative person, but did struggle with substance use, and even talked about going into recovery when I talked to one of his cousins who he lived with. He moved in with one of his cousins, a man and the man's wife, and they were living in Springfield, and they were just all three of them were working at fast food jobs. They were very busy, working hard, but struggling. And the cousin said that that Earl and he talked about opening up a business, maybe a thrift shop someday. So they were young and had dreams, and everybody was totally shocked. And I think that most people think when you're going to call an ambulance service, you're going to get help, and you don't really associate it with dying at the hands of those people allegedly. So, Mr. Moore has, from all accounts, he was well liked, and he was popular in his family, and they're just trying to move on. I think that Ben Crump mentioned that it's important that people realize that black tears are just as painful as white tears, and that but he was definitely shocked, and he said, well, we thought that we were just going to have to focus on police treatment of people, and we thought the police handled this well, but now maybe we should be focusing on different cases in which we never see behind closed doors how EMS workers are treating people. So that's the state we're in this country right now.
Dean Olson is senior staff writer at Illinois Times weekly newspaper in Springfield. Dean, thanks so much for being with us on the 21st show and sharing your reporting with us.
Thank you.
When we return, we're going to continue talking about this case with the president of the Springfield branch of the NAACP, as well as a program director for emergency medical technician training at a community college in Illinois. That's on the 21st show. If you want to join our conversation, how are you reacting to what's been happening? 800-222-9455 is the number to join us. That's 800-222-9455. This is the 21st show. Stay with us. It's the 21st show. I'm Brian Mackey, and we are talking today about the case of Earl Moore Jr., who is a man who had struggled with alcohol dependency. He was having an episode one night. He called 911. Police responded at first, but thought he needed medical care, not police, so they called an ambulance, and Moore eventually died in the custody, or seemingly in the custody, of the ambulance workers. There's a civil lawsuit against the ambulance company, LifeStar, which, by the way, we invited to join us on the program, and they did not respond to our invitations. And there are also murder charges against the two emergency medical technicians in the case. 800-222-9455 if you want to join our conversation today. That's 800-222-9455. For more on this case, we're joined now by Teresa Haley, the president of the Springfield branch of the NAACP. Teresa, welcome back to the 21st show. Thanks for being with us.
It's good to be here. Thank you for having me.
Also with us is Trevor Smith, the EMS program director at Richland Community College in Decatur. Trevor, welcome to the 21st show to you as well.
Good morning. Thanks for having me on.
So, Teresa, now that we've heard the facts of the case from Dean Olson in our previous segment, what was your just initial reaction to hearing about Moore's death?
Well, I saw the video and my initial reaction was my. You know, what is the world coming to? EMS workers are supposed to save lives, prolong life, and get that individual to the hospital, but they did just the opposite. To watch a video and to see EMS come into a room that they really didn't want to be there and not have the medical equipment to assist him. From the very beginning, I saw no equipment, nothing. She didn't even try to check this gentleman's vitals. I was very disappointed. I was hurt as I watched it. I watched that horror unfold. The tone in which she used was disrespectful. I thought the person was getting ready to get off work. I said, you know, this happened between 2 and 2:30 a.m. Maybe she gets off at 3 and she should have recused the call and let someone else go out to this resident. Nevertheless, she refused and told the other gentleman not to bring the stretcher into the house, that Earl needed to get up and walk outside of the house. He could not walk. In the video, you see him fall off the bed onto the floor. The police said he needed help. They assisted him outside. The police even assisted in putting him up on that gurney or that stretcher. At that time, EMS should have readjusted him or repositioned him, had him laying on his back, raised the stretcher, strapped him down, started looking at his vitals, checking his vitals, since they didn't do it inside of the house. But none of that was done. Instead, they treated him like a criminal. They treated him like an animal. They slammed him face down on the gurney, causing him to asphyxiate on himself and to later die. I was very disappointed. I thought this could be my son. This could be my brother. You know, this could be any little kid that I've coached or worked with in the Springfield community and around the state and around the country. So I was horrified.
Trevor Smith, I want to bring you into the conversation now. What is your sort of assessment as an instructor of emergency medical technicians of the care that Moore was given or not given?
Overall, we always go by the medical slogan that first do no harm. So when we arrive on any sort of scene, we should always look at doing what's correct for the patient and serving as that patient advocate. Even if we've been to that house before, if this is the first time we've been there, we should treat that person as if we're a member of our own family and provide the highest level of care that we can for them. So that, I think Teresa hit a lot of these points, but making sure that you assess the patient to determine what their current status is, and then providing the right means of getting them to the ambulance and safely to the hospital without causing further harm to them, and hopefully actually improving their condition before they finish transport.
You know, a lot has been made of the fact that he was placed face down. Is that ever sort of called for in the protocols?
So I've been told that the memorial protocol explicitly says that it should not be done. I actually went back to my initial EMT book when I went through their initial training, which was copyrighted in 2003, and was actually able to find a paragraph stating that it is a dangerous position to position the patient in. We always want to position the patient in the best position for that patient, which normally is in a face up and even sitting up position. However, there are some very subtle cases where if the patient, for example, has an injury to their back, that we would be careful not to aggravate that injury. But I did not see that in this specific instance.
Yeah, I suppose if somebody had a big laceration on their back or something like that, maybe in that case. Okay. Teresa Haley, then, so as this has proceeded through the courts, there are now murder charges, and I wonder what your reaction was. That's, as we've been hearing, pretty unusual in this sort of case, if not unprecedented.
Unusual, but very necessary. I mean, they killed this young man. You know, again, paramedics, all of us are supposed to help prolong life, not take life. And they contributed in taking this gentleman's life, I personally do believe. But, you know, I spent a lot of time with Earl's mom and Earl's sister. Earl was like an old soul, and I came up with three F's. He cared about family, he cared about friends, and he cared about fishing. He was a fisherman. He'd love anytime he was off work and it was warm enough to go fishing, Earl said, "Let's go fishing." His family referred to him as Earl. You know, they would say his name twice. He didn't have any children, but he loved all of his nieces and his little cousins. They would come around Uncle Earl, anything that those kids wanted, anything that his family wanted. He was a provider. He was a mama's boy. Rose loved her son. And she says to me all the time, you know, my son would call me 2 and 3 times a day. My son would come over and say, "Mama, do you need anything?" "No, I don't need anything." "Mama, are you sure you don't need anything?" So she misses those kinds of things. She is scared. She is unable to sleep. She is unable to eat. I didn't know Rose. I didn't know Earl's family before this. But now they're a part of my family. And my goal is to spread the word, to talk about Earl, to talk about all the positives. He was loved. He worked on his job for 18 years at McDonald's. And rain, sleet, or snow, he was walking to work. You could see him walking down the street because he didn't drive and he didn't have a car. There were several times he was in a position to have a car. He didn't have a car, but he made sure his mother and his sister had transportation.
Talk about how, as the head of the local NAACP branch, how is the community reacting to this sort of treatment from emergency medical personnel? I think we're used to hearing by this time, sadly, charges of poor treatment at the hands of police among our Black citizens. What are people saying? Is this an untold but more common story than we might understand about emergency medical services?
The Black community is more frustrated than scared. They say that they're going to think twice about calling the paramedics, and we want them to call the paramedics. But in this situation, what was even weird to me when I was reviewing the tape and the fire chief was in the room, the police chief was in the room, everyone was in the room. And I said to the fire chief, "Why weren't you guys there?" When things happen in the communities or somebody calls 911 in Springfield, the fire department usually shows up before the paramedics do. and they said they didn't receive the call because the police were called to the house and got the 911 call and realized this guy was not being a disturbance to the neighborhood. He was detoxing. They felt that he needed medical assistance. So the fire department was bypassed in that case, and the paramedics were called to assist. The Black community, the Brown community, the poor community, I just believe people are treated unfairly. So there is a health disparity depending on where you live in my community. And not only is it isolated to Springfield, this is around the country. But I have to tell you, since Earl's death and this information has come out, I've probably received 5 or 6 calls from Black families and white families alike whose loved ones died from being placed down on the gurney. So Ben Crump and his team is looking into those cases now. This isn't the first time it's happened, but we want to ensure that this is going to be the last time it happens. So I appreciate Trevor being on the call. I'm a certified CPR instructor. We know the basic trainings. We know to ask a person, are you okay? Are you okay? And to check their vitals. Again, none of that was done. There was no compassion shown to this individual who was laying there in severe pain and dying.
Let me remind listeners, this is the 21st show. I'm Brian Mackey. We're talking about the case of Earl Moore Jr., who died under the care or allegedly lack of care of 2 emergency medical technicians in Springfield. 800-222-9455. If you want to join our conversation, we're talking about this with Teresa Haley, president of the Springfield branch of the NAACP. Moore was Black. The paramedics were white. We're also speaking with Trevor Smith, the EMS program director at Richland Community College in Decatur. Trevor, talk about what kind of training does an EMT receive before they actually get out into an ambulance and responding to calls in the community?
Sure. So an EMT, an emergency medical technician, is the lowest level of education for an individual to work on an ambulance, with the paramedic being typically the highest level. So an emergency medical technician goes through about 120 hours of class, and typically that starts with the background of the profession. But then we spend a significant part of the class, probably about a quarter of the class, talking about what is the correct way to move a patient safely from wherever we find them to the ambulance. The class then, of course, covers patient assessment, how to manage an airway, vital signs, and then trauma, medical, and cardiac care as well. So it's about 1 semester course is typically where people start before they work on the ambulance.
And then a paramedic is advanced training beyond that, and they have the authority to administer different medications in the field and that sort of thing?
Correct. So paramedic is typically approximately a 2-year program, including the EMT basic. So that's typically the people that would start IVs and administer more invasive drugs and interventions to the patient.
I know at least one of the people charged with murder in this case was a paramedic. The other I've seen referred to as an EMT. You know, we did reach out to the Illinois EMS Association. They declined to be on our program, but they did provide a statement that says, in part, EMS as an industry is struggling with crisis-level staffing challenges that are pushing the demands on EMS providers beyond limits, with individuals working longer shifts, facing massive burnout, and facing challenges beyond those that other industries face. This is not an excuse for what happened, and we hope the public sees that this is not a representation of EMS in Illinois. Trevor, what do you think about that? Do you see burnout in the industry? I guess you're dealing with people on the beginning of their careers as they're in training, but
I still actively work as a paramedic and for a few agencies, and absolutely. We often talk, and again, what happened to Mr. Moore was an absolute tragedy, and this does not excuse any of that. However, what we see is that unlike a truck driver or an airplane pilot, there is no statutory limit to how long an emergency medical technician or paramedic can work in a week. And often, based on the rate of pay, we see these providers work not uncommonly 60 or 80 hours a week or more, potentially. And again, they work typically 24-hour shifts, but it's not unheard of them to pick up more than 1 24-hour shift in a row due to low staffing levels, and then also the need to continue to meet their own financial needs.
Teresa Haley, I wonder, as you have been working on this case, what do you see as sort of, are there systemic changes that you see might be in order following this?
Definitely. I think it starts with basic education. What we're charged to do is to educate, to empower, and to inform the community when we see something, say something. And I think Earl's case is going to make everyone more aware of what's protocol and what's not. Using common sense is important, regardless if you're burnt out or not. It's like going to work and you're tired and you're sick. On those days, don't go to work because it can cost someone's life, like it did in Earl's case. And so we are going to do everything in our power to make sure that we're educating, we're empowering, and we're giving people the tools that they need. And if, for example, we talked about if paramedics come to your house and you see that they're being rude, disrespectful, or handling your loved one carelessly or very hostile, tell them to back off. Tell them that their service is not needed and call another paramedic. I believe that if Earl would have remained at home, he would still be here today. But that's only God's decision. But I also believe in the bottom of my heart, those individuals killed Earl by placing him face down and strapping him down and being so hostile. One of the things that we discovered is that he had some broken ribs, and the family was really upset to find that out as we went through the autopsy. But I explained, being a CPR instructor, if you're doing CPR correctly, you're going to crack or break some ribs. And our community, Black and Brown community, was able to be a little more calm after hearing that from someone who looked like them as well. So I know that the paramedics and EMS is going to be using this as a case study for what to do and what not to do. But let's just make sure that we're sharing the information and we're treating everybody with dignity and respect. Because when we cry, our tears are clear. When we bleed and that oxygen or air hits it, all of our blood is the same color. It's red. And let's just love people and treat them with dignity and respect.
Trevor, final word probably to you. Any systemic changes you see coming to EMS on account of this case? I imagine it's going to be much discussed in the community, and we've only got about a minute left.
Sure. I've already played the body cam video in all of my classes and used it, as Teresa mentioned, as a case study of things that we should not do with care. But as far as systemic change, we'll have to see what happens with time. After the George Floyd incident, we definitely went back and addressed our patient restraint education to make sure that we were up to date and teaching what we should be doing so we do not endanger patients' lives. And I think, unfortunately, this is another case that illustrates that point.
Well, we will continue to follow this case as it develops. Trevor Smith is EMS Program Director at Richland Community College in Decatur. Teresa Haley is President of the Springfield Branch of the NAACP. Teresa Haley, Trevor Smith, thank you so much for being with us today on the 21st Show. Appreciate your time.
Thanks, Brian.
Thank you.
Coming up after the break, we're going to be speaking with a person who spent her entire career studying Islam, teaching Islam, and we'll talk about some of the challenges that she faced and the changes she has seen in that field. That's coming up after a short break. This is the 21st Show. Stay with us.